Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which, over the course of the last 5 years and 149 episodes, has revealed everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explained how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And phew, Kate, really 5 years, 149 episodes. No wonder we need a lie down.
Well, absolutely, yes. As many of you will now know, the podcast is having a bit of a lie down for a while.
Bit of a rest.
And so on that note, we thought we'd go over some of the things we've taught you over the years about making the most of your home. Some of our favourite, is favourite the right word for design crimes? some of the worst design crimes.
And just really generally reminisce about how much we've loved hanging out together. And more importantly, how much we've loved hanging out with our lovely listeners, our community of insiders, all of you who hang out on the Facebook group and all the regular DMs we get from you on social media. You really have been the family, the Great Indoors family. We've loved hanging out with you. And also the little interjections from, let's not forget, Lucy the dog. I've got a feeling she'll be popping up on today's podcast, no doubt, because I haven't taken her for a walk for 2 days. She's been particularly restless. And there's been Jerry the guinea pig.
I have to say, when we were talking about this, you said, oh, we should mention all the interjections we've had, you know, from F and Jeff the guinea pig and, you know, Lucy the dog. And you mentioned Enid the cat. And to be fair, Enid the cat has not once interjected on this show. She may be in the room sometimes. She's actually not in the room today. But, you know, interjecting is not really Enid's
thing. No, it doesn't actually happen in your house, because there's also the mad husband, a.k.a. Mrs. Miggins, who brings the cup of tea. Always in silence,
creeping in. Also coffee, not tea. This is not a household of tea.
Of course, I think. Well, there you go. After 5 years and 149 episodes, I still get that wrong.
There you go. So, where do we want to start? I thought we could start because we have really enjoyed sharing our knowledge with everyone and our ideas. And obviously, anyone who's listened to this show, you know, more than once will know that we often have different ideas. But I wonder, we've joked in the past about how perhaps we've slightly swapped personalities. But, you know, I hope, perhaps, have we learnt things from each other?
Ooh, yes, I think we most certainly have. And do you think we're in danger, Kate, of agreeing less? Because I think one of the things that people really loved about our podcast was our very differing points of view. And I seem to remember our first ever episode was "Is Grey Dead?" Which I was very much on board with. You not so much at the time, because I believe you'd only recently written a book about that colour. But now we come to 149 episodes, nearly 5 years later. Are we more on board than we ever were? Oh, see, there we go. Interjection. Dog wants letting in.
It's because she likes grey. Oh, you were going to tell me everything you'd learnt from me,
yes,
over the course
all
of the
right
podcast.
Well, I had to give this some great thought.
Oh, okay, thanks.
And it took me quite a long time because I really didn't think there was anything. But but then I thought, there are a couple of things that I think have been ingrained into my way of thinking, perhaps without knowing. And one of them is your rather brilliant, if I do say so myself, red thread concept that's
oh,
been
yes
talked about a lot over the podcast. Now, this is the concept that you take. I think originally you said a colour, but when I really dismantled my sort of design process, I thought sometimes it's a colour, sometimes
yeah, it's a fabric,
it's a fabric or a motif,
yeah,
or a material. But this idea that you repeat something throughout the house in every room, which brings a general feeling of cohesion, I think was such a brilliant way of describing something. And I think this is kind of your genius, isn't it? Is designers do these things and they know to do them, but they don't know that they're doing them.
I can really hear Lucy chewing now. I hope no one's offended. It's quite loud. But I'm just going to take a moment for that interruption to say that I don't think I can lay claim to having invented the red thread, but I could perhaps lay claim to talking about it more than anyone else.
Yes, yeah, so you can definitely lay claim to that. But I thought, and I think as well over the years, that's something that our listeners have really picked up on a lot. It's such a common problem. How do you decorate rooms in a different way, you know, different colour schemes, you want to have a different theme, different artwork, different objects, make every room feel individual, and yet the house doesn't feel completely sort of schizophrenic, you know, it all sort of hangs together. So I think the way you made this story, the red thread coming from that, is it an ancient Greek mythology, the idea that...
Do you want it?
Come on, let's hear it one more time.
Because I do love that story.
I've heard it so many times, but I'm not as brainy as you and I've already forgotten it.
There are many, many red threads in all sorts of different mythologies. From, you know, weddings and tying a red thread to each other. But my favourite one is the ancient Greek one of Ariadne, who gave a red thread to Theseus to lead him through the labyrinth to find and slay the Minotaur, and so that he could find his way back out, having slain the Minotaur, to come back out of the cave. There you go, followed the red thread.
Such a good story. And we're using it so you don't get lost on your design journey.
Nicely wrestled back. Like it. And I would just like to point out that the red thread doesn't have to be red. It can be any colour, material, style that you wish it to be. And I noted it did not go unnoticed that you claimed to have had to spend a long time thinking about what I might have taught you. So obviously I've spent even longer thinking about what I might have learned from you. I mean, frankly, you know, I've been sleepless nights for about a week. But I finally came up with it. A small thing.
You were just trying to work out which was the best of the many, many, many ideas I've given you.
Well,
that was,
you know,
the deliberation.
As I think the phrase would be something like, you know, you tell your truth and I will share my lived experience or something. But what I'm going to go with is potentially two in one. And that is, I find lighting rooms with lamps and different intensities of lights fairly straightforward, but I find planning in downlights or spotlights or fixed lights quite hard. So I learned that from you, but then before we got to learn that from you, it was that very key point that you have to start with the floor plan in the room, because you cannot put your fixed lights in place until you know where the furniture is going. And of course, for most of us, there aren't 36 places where the bed and the sofa can go. So those are fairly straightforward. But, you know, if you're starting a kitchen from scratch, or you've got a bigger bedroom, or you want to light, you know, not just the sofa, but the table and chairs, you've got to do the floor plan and then you can put the lights in. And, you know, I think that bears you repeating again, if you can, because it's so important.
Yeah, it's so overlooked, isn't it? And I think people just put a grid of spotlights in the ceiling. Oh, we might have just unearthed one of my most favourite design crimes.
Oh, yes.
And you see it all the time. And this is what's rather amusingly termed developer's acne. Because when developers were always flipping property, they used to just put a huge bank of downlighters in a grid in every room and whack on all the lights. And then people would walk in and go, gosh, doesn't it look really bright and, you know, sunny in here? But actually, when you come to live in it, you feel like you're in a...
You're doing an autopsy.
Yeah, exactly that.
It's all gone a bit Dexter.
Exactly. Abattoir chic. I think we've got a new trend on the horizon. Anyway, yeah, so it's whenever you're designing a room from scratch. So this is for the renovators for sure, isn't it? People who are at a point where they can choose where they're going to have their lighting and their sockets. So yeah, typically bathrooms, kitchens, but every room. I think a living room is really, really key, because I never want a downlighter above the sofa burning a hole in my retina. So it's thinking about light should be positioned where you want something to be highlighted. That is what lights are there to do. They are not there to create a symmetrical pattern of dots on your ceiling. And I have had so many arguments with electricians on this very point over the years. They're like, well, you can't have lights in random places on the ceiling. It won't look... They won't look in line. And I'm like, who's lying on the floor trying to line up the downlighters? If you are, you need to go and speak to a professional about that, because that's a different problem.
Well, I just want to interrupt there, because what's really funny is it's one of those things where when you say it right, it is so bleeding obvious. Put the light where you need to see the thing.
Yes. Well, if you the thing wants to be highlighted. So it should be, you know, central over the bath rather than just, you know, in
the
each
floor.
Corner. Yeah, exactly. It should be, I think, a really nice tip in living rooms especially, because I don't want it over the sofa because I don't want it in my eyes. So I'll put them in the centre close to the window. So when the curtains are drawn in the evening, the light throws lovely light over all the beautiful fabric curtains that I've just had put out.
And that's also a really valid point, because I think there can be a temptation when you're putting them around the edge of the room to think, you know, I'll put it in the middle of the wall because I'll hang a picture under it. But then that means you can't really ever move that picture because the light is, you know, then the light is just shining pointlessly down. So put them closer to the windows because you can't move those.
You know, rather than thinking a downlighter has to go in the centre of the wall, you can put it off to one side where your gallery wall or art's going to be. Doesn't, you know, you don't have to have it centre to each picture, I'd say. But, you know, if you've got a door and then a piece of wall where your artwork's going to go, centre it to the area where the artwork's going to go and forget about the door.
Yeah.
Because when that light's on, it's going to shine light on the artwork and you want that to be symmetrical. So, yeah, anyway, yeah, so lovely. A lighting has been one of your biggest takeaways. Do you want to know another one of mine?
Go on then.
From you, because I hope you thought of more than one, because I have.
Yeah, I know. Excuse me. Exactly what I'm thinking. rummaging about. I gave you two in one. We went floor plan and lights.
Another one of yours I really loved is your I'm going to call it an obsession because it really was at one point, painted ceilings. I had never really considered the benefits of a painted ceiling quite so much as your passion for painting ceilings of colour. And this is your design crime right now coming up, white paint.
Yes, I mean, I should explain that. And yeah, I mean, I do love a painted ceiling. I think it can bring a lot to a room.
We're never going to forget the ceiling of shiny poo.
My gold ceiling, which I think, you know, really dedicated listeners could go back and find the episode where you said it was going to look like shiny poo and then you said it didn't look like shiny poo.
Lovely. And I think it influenced quite a lot of people. We had quite a lot of DMs from people who had gone down the gold ceiling route.
The joy of that ceiling is, and that's why I love painted ceilings, is that you're not looking at them all the time. You can just sort of, if you're sitting at a desk, and I had mine in my office, you know, sometimes it's just about sort of gazing upwards for a bit of inspiration.
Or just having this golden glow shine down in you.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's very flattering as well. I mean, you know, there's a reason why people, you know, you can buy expensive lampshades where the inside is lined with gold, because it gives a very beautiful, soft, flattering light. So yes, coloured ceilings, you know, it's another surface, don't waste it. And for the most part, you know, it's quite an empty surface. You know, all the floors down on the bottom, there's artwork on the walls. Your ceiling, you know, it needs a bit of help. Sometimes it's only got a big light on it, sometimes hasn't even got a big light. We don't all have ceiling roses, although interestingly, I'm working with a client / friend actually now on a big hotel project in Mallorca. And I said, well, in this room, which is a small dark room, and she doesn't really like it, so we're looking at bringing some yellow into it. And I said, paint the ceiling. And we realised actually that there are times when it doesn't work, but because this is a sort of hotel / apart hotel, she's got to have smoke alarms and speakers and cables and lights. You know, sometimes there's an awful lot of quite ugly, boring stuff on a ceiling and you don't necessarily want to highlight. But if you've got a plain ceiling, then, you know, make the most of it, because my line on that is, you know, you don't wear a white t-shirt with everything. So why make your ceilings white? That's why my white's a design crime as well. And I think it's interesting because I have no white in my house at all. I have sort of soft creams, and my absolutely favourite neutral colour of all on the ceiling in my bedroom is a colour called Leather by Paint and Paper Library. And I mean, it's cream. I don't know why they call it leather, but it's a beautiful colour. It's like paper. You know what we used to at school call rough paper? It's a bit like that, but a bit warmer, not so grey. And I think that is very often a better solution. But you use white paint, and you have explained to me where white paint can work, and it's about making other colours seem more intense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in my hallway, I've got a white stair, my paint of my stairs and banister white, and everything else is that very, very deep lazuli blue. And we have a very pretty staircase that we spent quite a lot of money getting a carpenter to build and put in, and I think I just really wanted to celebrate it because it's just a really lovely thing. So the bright white against the deep blue. And I think blue and white is such a classic colour combination. It just looks really sharp and crisp. So I suppose what we're saying, and, you know, this is perhaps, you know, one of the biggest takeaways, again, that I feel I've always talked about in the podcast, is colour has an effect in a room. It's never just random. So colour is going to affect how you feel in a space. It's going to create the mood. But colour also affects what you see, what blends away and disappears, and what's pops out and asks for attention. So I suppose just slathering everything in white, or thinking that all ceilings need to be white and woodwork needs to be white, if you've got dark coloured walls, your ceiling and your skirting boards are just going to absolutely shout out for attention, and you might not want them to be the thing. So it's just understanding how colour in a space works, rather than just defaulting to white painted woodwork, because that's just what everybody does.
And I think this is my problem with white, is it doesn't get treated as another colour as part of the scheme. It gets defaulted to. So the reason that your white ceiling works in your cobalt blue hall is that you have tiles on the floor which are blue and white with a bit of black.
Yeah, so it is part
so
of the
white
scheme.
Has a reason to be there. It's part of the scheme.
And all the artwork that I have hanging in there as well has like a nice white card border. So it's pulled in there as well.
Exactly. So it's this isolation. Idea that people spend, you know, so much money on tester pots, and they consider every cushion and sofa and rug and floor and wall, and then they just cap it off with a bit of white skirting board and a white ceiling. And it's like, I don't understand why there's white in this space, because it doesn't flow. And the other final point on that, of course, is that if you do all your woodwork in white, you are outlining the edges of the room. That makes the room, it's much more distracting to the eye, can make it feel less relaxing, and sort of outlines the size of your room, which in a small space or a hall with a lot of doors can make it feel much busier.
So white, I think, is one of your well-established design crimes. And actually, when I reached out to the Great Indoors Facebook group to ask them what were their favourite parts of the show, and I've got some of those to share later on in this episode, but there were quite a few people who piped up and said, we loved your design crimes. Do you remember those?
I do.
We kept them running for a couple of years, and then I think we sort of ran out of them, and that got passed over. But I wondered whether we just reflect for a moment on, first of all, what the idea of design crimes was. It was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing, to be honest. We didn't want to be snooty. We've never wanted to have that kind of attitude in the podcast. This is a kind of like, if you love it, you can have it. And yet, there are some things that just really give us the ick. Oh, that's such a TikTok thing to say, isn't it?
Get you with your TikTok phrases. Yeah, yeah. I think the point was as well, as we've just explained with white ceilings, it's not that it's a design crime as such. It's about there's a reason why it doesn't always work. And so that can tip it into crime territory. And all we were trying to do was explain that there can be a better way.
That was very diplomatic of
you. We don't make the rules. We do have to enforce them sometimes.
They were just things I really hate and get up my nose. That's basically what they were.
Well, you know me, I'm ever the diplomat.
So what can you think of any design crimes that still irk you? Or have you mellowed in the 5 years since we've been running this podcast?
I very much doubt it. I very much doubt it. If anything, you know, recording this on a Friday afternoon, I might be even more furious than normal.
All right, I'm going to remind you of some then. So one of my first design crimes, which is still a design crime, is cushions, but obviously not all cushions, because I am a supreme lover of cushions.
I was going to say, you can't have a cushion that is a design crime.
I have terms.
Oh, terms and conditions. T's and C's are available.
I have T's and C's when it comes to cushions. So I absolutely hate cushions filled with poor quality microfillers that go really flat and pancakey.
Oh, do you know, I'm really with you. But you know what? My younger son has, I don't know where it came from. I'm assuming we bought it at some point, maybe when he was tiny and we thought we'd be sick on it. He's got a real pancake flat microfiber pillow. And he loves it. And I cannot tell you how many times.
To sleep on.
Yeah. He's 20 now. I cannot tell you how many times over the years I've gone, right, we're buying new pillows. Do you want one? He's like, no, I want my pancake. It's really strange.
That's so strange.
It must be like a teddy bear or something. I mean, you know, it must just be familiar. But yes, I get you.
Absolutely no comfort. And then cushions arranged on their tips like a diamond. I think that was one of my first ever design crimes.
I recall you going to
a hotel.
It was the first time we recorded on location, and it was very early on, And yes, we went to Dublin to record an episode live with DFS, a very early and much loved sponsor of the show, as the first people in. When people didn't know what podcasts were, I mean, they came in and sponsored
us. And they gave us huge support to get us off the ground, didn't
they? And they did. And we went to this hotel. However, where you came out of the lift, there was a sofa with about five or six cushions arranged in regimented diamonds. And I mean, you flipped your lid. You had to go around punching them all back into shape.
I know, furious.
The other one is the karate. No, there's the karate chop, which I hate. But the other one, which I...
Because it's too contrived.
It's too contrived. The other one, which I don't mind, which I think can work, is where I've seen it done, which is like a square cushion. And it's not a karate chop on the top, which is very contrived, but it's a little bit of sort of giving it a waist. How do we feel about that?
That's karate chop in reverse, isn't it?
Well, it sort of is.
Yes. No, you've got to chuck them on the sofa and punch them in the middle. That's what I do to my cushions.
There you go. Get cushion big, technique.
Big and fluffy. Throw them in the air. Give them a good old fluff. And then punch them in the middle.
There we go.
And make them look nice and relaxed and natural.
That's very good for that Friday afternoon spurt of anger too. I'm just going to go and rearrange my cushions. Which involves throwing them in the air, catching them and punching them. Hooray!
I tell you what, talking about anger, I've just taken up weight training again. I got really into my weight training all through lockdown and everything. And then I dropped it because I got overwhelmed with everything else. And I'm just back on it in 2024. Oh, Kate, it's such a good conduit for my anger. I did a plank for a minute and 29 seconds this morning.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
And I was so furious. It was brilliant.
Were you held rigid by fury alone?
Yeah, I was fueled by fury. I absolutely need that on a t-shirt. Right, talking about furious, one of the things I remember got you the most furious from Design Crimes was rug islands.
Oh, yes, I can't. I still do. You see, I haven't mellowed at all. I can't be doing with a rug island, which is like a really small rug. It actually isn't rug island. It should really be sort of rug lake with coffee table island floating down the room on it. I can't. It makes the room feel bitty. It makes it look like you couldn't afford a bigger rug. And if you couldn't afford a bigger rug, then don't have a rug at all. The rug needs to have all, or at least the front legs of the furniture around it, on it. That creates a zone in an open plan space, or even not in an open plan space. My rule on rugs is very simple. Buy the biggest one you can afford, or buy two small ones and layer them. I love rug layering.
Yeah, you do a lovely bit of rug layering. And it goes the same for dining rooms. Make sure the chairs can sit on the rug, and in beds. I think it's good to get the bottom third of a bed on a rug is a nice idea. Short curtains. That's popped up a few times. I watched Interior Design Master's first episode recently, as in this new Series 5. New Series 5, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I'm even on it, so why wouldn't I love it? But
I haven't watched it.
Watched on catch up yet, Kate, I'm on episode 2, just saying. But yeah, first episode, one of the designers, their curtain stopped about a foot short of the floor.
Random.
And I can't tell you how vexing I find that. Your curtains must go all the way to the floor unless you live in a cottage, in which case it can look quite sweet. Or if indeed, you know, there's a table or a piece of furniture underneath the window, that can look quite sweet. Otherwise, they just look mean, make your walls look short. They're a hard no from me.
I also think on that note, I like a long curtain, but you can absolutely, if you're really clever with your measurements, stop them, you know, sort of a centimetre, half a centimetre above the floor. It makes them easy to pull. I'm not a big fan of the puddled curtain unless you live in a ballroom. Well, do you know why? Because it's just time, isn't it? You've got to arrange the puddle and they collect dust.
Or do you know what I like? I think they call it the trouser hem. You know, like a trouser just sits on your shoe and it gives it a little kink.
Yes.
It's like 1 centimetre too long.
Yeah.
I like that. I do quite like that.
You see, I've got randomly in my bedroom, because clearly I live in an old house and the floors aren't straight, and my bedroom has two windows, and one of the windows is a beautiful skim across the floor. I mean, it just like by a hair touches the floor. It's like, you know, 3 millimetres, beautiful. The other one's got the trouser and it kinks, and it's literally annoying. And they were made to the same length, you know, they were beautifully made and they were made to the same length, and it's really not the maker's fault, it is the house's fault. Because I'm just looking through these design crimes, actually. You have just flashed up a list in front of me. And I think you've slightly got a panic that most of these are my design crimes and that you're perhaps more tolerant. I think you've only got a problem with cushions. I've got a problem with everything.
Well, I put the colour grey on there. That's one of mine. And I, you know, we opened the first episode of the show back in October 2018 with Is Grey Dead? And me really, really billing quite a hard case for its demise. And I think we can all credit me now that I've really, really buried that colour in terms of a trend. I'm taking all the credit for that.
I'm just going to say, because I always think it's funny, it took us 8 hours to record that first episode. So if any of you feel like going back to listen to it, just please, you know that it took 8 hours to get that episode recorded. And I think it's probably all of 25 minutes long, but God, we have got quicker.
We have got quicker.
I'm still not killing Grey. I'm still...
What?
I'm not killing it. I, at the moment, don't want it in my house. Some people like it. I do have, and have had for a while, a problem. A pale grey is not my thing. I think it can be cold. I still love the very famous downpipe. It's a deep, dark grey. It's almost a bit of green in some lights.
Yes,
I still think that's a stunning colour.
It's a clever, it is a clever grey, that one. You're right, because it's a Farron Ball colour. It has got a lot of undertones to it. It's a very rich. It's not like a battleship grey, is it? It's got a lot of rich pigment to it. It really, really works. And I think that's probably the thing. If you're going to go for a grey, I would go for one of the designer paints.
Yeah. It's interesting because we did our bedroom in the last house when I was writing the book on grey. Our bedroom was pavilion grey. And it's very interesting because pavilion grey, another Farrow and Ball colour, that was a south-facing bedroom. And in a south-facing room, when the sun was out and we had a vintage wooden table and an old wooden bed, that colour was beautiful. In the photographs of it, however, it looks like a prison. And I think it's because, you know, photographers often don't want to shoot in bright sunlight because it gets shadows and it's difficult. So, you know, that house will have been shot on sort of dull days when the light was steady and the colour comes across as cold. And I've looked back at that room and I thought, God, how could I do that colour? And then I remember it with the wood and the sunshine. You know, this is the problem with grey. It's, I mean, it, you know, that's the reason I wrote a whole book on it. It's a really tricky colour to get right most of the time. It ends up
wrong.
But I
think what's so fascinating is, you know, when we started the podcast, you know, the question was, is grey dead? It was still pretty pervasive then. Whereas I think what a colour journey we've all been.
Oh, Lucy likes grey.
She wants to sit on the chair and she needs me to lift her bottom up. Grey was just so pervasive and people were still not embracing colour. And I think what an incredible journey we've been on from 2018 to here we are in 2024 with COVID, the pandemic, lockdown happening in the middle of it. And I'm remembering that brilliant recent episode from this year that we had with Karen Harler, the colour psychology expert. She's not a psychologist, very important to remember that. And she talked about how grey is a very emotionally cold, neutral colour. It doesn't really do a lot for us, but it's a colour that people just find really easy to live with because it just doesn't do anything. It's kind of ultimately a bit meh. And I think what's so interesting is, I mean, I've never seen so much colour being embraced in my life on Instagram and social media, in the stores. I mean, we really are having a massive colour embracing revolution underway right now. And I think it is that experience of a couple of years in lockdown, really wanting to find the joy in colour and in our homes and really getting in touch with the types of colour.
I think that's the key point for me, is that we're now having an understanding of the effect that colour has on our mood, and therefore that's encouraged us to be a bit braver because of spending so much time at home in the lockdown and understanding that actually just looking at a nice colour or what might have started out as your favourite picture on the wall that makes you feel happy, and then that understanding dawning that you can look at that picture and it's got those colours that make you happy. So you could bring some of those colours into your decor and you won't get arrested. You might even feel better. I think there's a lot of fear around colour, a lot of fear that, you know, that you'll go off it or you'll get bored. And, you know, we do come back and say, you know, it's a tin of paint. You know, it's the most transformative thing you can do. And it's up to you how much you spend. You know, you can go from the very affordable, cheaper brands to the high-end designer.
And we've done a whole episode on that as well.
We have.
Is designer paint worth it? Another one of our most popular episodes. It kind of reminds me, though, of this journey that I feel we've all been on. And the podcast has really documented this journey of really appreciating the importance of home. And it reminds me of an episode we did with Julia Samuel during the second lockdown, this was like peak anxiety, I think, episode 58, if anybody wants to go back to it. And she really talked beautifully about the importance of home. And she shared how during lockdown, she'd got into recovering furniture. She was making lampshades out of scrap fabrics. She was enjoying adding a pop of unexpected colour in her home. But then she just said, it's like the small sources of delight. She said, look for the source of delight, buying a bunch of flowers, lighting some candles, and listening to Julia. I just re-listened to it this morning because I kind of wanted to go back to that really strange time, and I thought she just distilled it so beautifully. That's, you know, yes, we can talk about the big renovations and the big decorating stories, but remembering these little sources of delight, so poignant.
Isn't that become a bit of a thing now? Is it called a glimmer? You know how people often look for things, people often focus on the sort of horrible thing of the day.
The trigger.
The trigger.
The opposite of the trigger. Yeah,
there you go. And it's about saying, do you know what? But that was a glimmer. So, you know, I just went into town this morning before we recorded this, and I got back and the bus was sitting really far back from the beginning of the bus station, which normally means a 20-minute wait. And I strolled up, got to the front. And as I got to the front, the bus driver drove up and off we went. There was a glimmer. No waiting for the bus. I mean, it's a small glimmer. But do you know what? And then it started raining and I just got in the front door literally 10 seconds before the heavens opened. There's another glimmer. So you've got to look for the glimmers. Julia was all about the glimmers.
Yes, sources of delight. I thought that was so lovely.
Lovely.
And the other thing that she brought out in that recent episode, and it's really worth a listen, was she said, actually, the most important thing to home happiness and feeling happy at home is love and connection to others. That's the most important thing. And I thought that was really lovely as well, especially when we're thinking of interior design and how we decorate our homes, is also seeing it as this lovely space in which we celebrate who we are, our friends, our family, and bringing people into our homes and a place of connection. And I think for a lot of our listeners, that is what creating a beautiful home is all about. This idea that you're creating a lovely space for everyone to feel connected.
Well, it's totally true. And you know, and the phrase is the kitchen is the heart of the home. But I've narrowed it down more. I've written about this and said it's not actually the kitchen. It's the table, wherever that table is. But it's that idea that there is a place in your home that is big enough for everybody to sit at. You know, and we all lead different lives and busy lives, and teenagers only want to be in their bedrooms and babies go to bed earlier. But that there is a space where everybody can come and sit and, you know, have a family meeting, have a row, work something out, have a laugh, share some food, you know, that. So it's
play a
that
board
table.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do the homework. It all happens around the table.
I mean,
it?
That might be your coffee table if you've got a small kitchen, but or, you know, but just a space or a sofa where everybody gathers to watch a film or something, you know, one
yeah,
space if you can.
Communal spaces can be really important. Having said all that, I do remember, Kate, that our favourite spaces during lockdown were the door, the rooms with the lock on, the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
The downstairs loo. I think...
Oh, it was one of my stats, yes.
That people were working in the downstairs loo.
9% of people were spending most of their time in the bathroom. It was something like that. And I, or were working in the bathroom. And it was sort of put out there as a bit of a joke. And you and I discussed it. And it was like, this is clearly mothers of small children who just need a break. You know, just want somewhere to lock the door and have a small cry.
The other thing I'm reminded, Kate, is how generous some of our guests have been in inviting us into their private spaces. I mean, we have got to see some fabulous celebrity homes.
We've done a lot of guests, haven't we?
We had a lot.
We had that Pearl Lowe. We had that Kelly Hoppen.
Fern Cotton was amazing.
Oh, yeah?
I loved meeting her in her home. She'd created a, as one would imagine from someone with a business all about happiness.
I tell you who we did go to, and obviously I bet, you know, she's now suddenly so famous, wouldn't get near her, was, you know, Queen of the Kitchen Disco, Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
Yes.
And since the film Saltburn, she's, you know, with Murder
Back
on the Dance Floor.
Isn't she?
I know. Can you imagine us ringing her up and going, hi, Sophie, can we come and look around your house? She'd be like, no, forget it. I'm far too famous and important for you too. But we got in there. What a great house.
I don't know. I think she is a fabulously down-to-earth person. Mother of five boys.
Yes,
you know,
that's true.
That was such an insight. And yeah, the fact that she opened up her kitchen to all of us over lockdown to create those kitchen discos, which then has led on to, you know, a regular BBC Radio 2 show. She's currently touring the globe, as you said, her career having a massive boost, not only from her Kitchen Discos, but yeah, from Murder on the Dance Floor, suddenly being discovered by a whole younger generation. But her home was so, as you would imagine, so wonderfully fabulous. She's a lover of kitchen collections, and I'll never forget her dressing room. She'd got this dressing room which was just wall-to-wall sequins. She collected kind of like circus outfits.
Yes, that's right.
Loads of sequined bodysuits. Yeah, sequin bodysuits. And then there was this like crib in the corner where her baby was sleeping. And I love the fact that her fifth child was basically his bedroom was her dressing room.
Yeah.
I thought that is quite a wild way to enter the world, isn't it? Basically shrouded
in sequins
and capes and the most fabulous shoe collection I've ever seen. So that was most definitely a highlight. Another one I remembered was our first, do you remember who our first ever guest was?
I do. We wouldn't. She's probably too busy to talk to us now as well. She maybe we are responsible for all these people's success. We interviewed them when they were no one and now suddenly they're huge.
Well, not quite no one.
Spot the common guest, denominator.
Our first guest was Trini Woodall, who is obviously now, you know, absolutely meteoric in her success with her brand. But we met her in quite a bijou little Chelsea.
Tiny bathroom.
Tiny little terraced house in Chelsea in a tiny bathroom. And she gave us a little makeup tutorial. But it gave me one of the biggest ever takeaways that I think a guest has ever given us. And I've never.
Me too.
Do you remember what it is?
Are you going to say? Yes, because I tell everybody.
It's so good, isn't it? So her biggest pearl in terms of interior design was east facing dressing rooms. East facing light is the most flattering for your skin. So if you're wanting somewhere to put your makeup on, she will never buy, she actually said she won't buy a house if it doesn't have an east-facing bedroom where she can put, or bathroom where she can put her makeup on. It's an absolute non-negotiable for her. And then also I think I went on to say during lockdown, which has continued anyway, the amount of Zooms and kind of webinars that I'm hosting. I have an east-facing office and I have my desk and my camera in the window, so I always look my best.
Oh, I'm just, so can you see me? We're recording this on Zoom so we can see each other. I'm doing a bit of gesticulating because I've just worked out that actually the window, my desk is east facing.
In your new house, because it wasn't in your old house. You were very cross. You didn't have an east-facing window in your last
house. I didn't, because I lived in a terraced house. So my windows were north and south. But actually, in this house, my windows are east and west. So yes, there we go. Zoom me up anytime because I'm going to look gorgeous. Yeah, she was a great guest, actually. And I still love her makeup.
Yeah, her makeup is amazing. And another amazing entrepreneur, obviously Kelly Hoppen. That was quite wowie, wasn't it? Her amazing house in Bayswater. But also her trying to convince us that she actually really did love colour and she could do colour. And then we went into this guest bedroom and there was like a little bit of teal. And that was it. I think she kind of painted the bottom quarter of the room teal blue. And then she'd put like a teal blue cushion on the bed. And she was really proud of it. And I've never been so underwhelmed in my life.
Well, it wasn't colour as you would determine colour. Let's
wasn't,
put it that way.
And I'm not criticising Kelly because what she does is impeccable. But let's be honest, she doesn't do colour.
The other one that was fun, but he's always fun, was old Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen.
He is possibly, Kate, the only guest we've had where we literally couldn't get a word in edgeways.
We were. We can say this now because, you know, all secrets can now be revealed. We recorded with Lawrence on Zoom, of course, because, you know, he lives a long way away and it was, I don't think it was quite lockdown. But anyhow, we recorded with him on Zoom and we resorted to having to pass each other notes below the camera on the desk going, please make him stop talking now. We've been recording for an hour. Make him stop. And then Sophie sending a message back going, I can't make him stop. You make him stop. And then us both looking at our producer and going, Kate, make him stop. I mean, he was brilliant. It's a great episode.
He's brilliant.
But my, I mean, the thing with Lawrence is you just kind of wind him up and point.
Yeah.
And then he just
so
speaks.
Entertaining. He was so brilliant. And I'm still not offended that he said Beatles are the middle class flamingos. That was one of his
pearls. Oh, I think I'd be offended.
You think I should be offended? I think he meant me to be offended, but I'm not offended. I still like my Beatles.
I don't like the flamingos either.
I think I like my Beatles primarily because you hate them so much and you always get very
upset. Yeah, and I've noticed they're breeding.
Yeah, I'm
there used
more.
To only be one, now there's another one. Yes. Well, if you want to know a reason why this podcast doesn't record in person anymore, then, you know, blame the gold beetles.
She can't deal with the beetles.
The gold stag beetles. Right. Well, on that note, shall we finish with a few lovely comments that you have harvested?
Yeah, it's really nice. I threw it out on the Facebook group and I said, you know, what is it? You know, we're sort of wrapping up for a while, going a bit down memory lane. What is it that you guys have loved the most about the podcast or got from the podcast? And got some really lovely comments, Kate. Not too many, because I know you'll start cringing with embarrassment because you can't take a compliment ever. But this one came in from Minnie Claridge, who says, the podcast was instrumental in me starting my interior design studio. I studied interior design at uni 15 years ago, but felt totally uninspired and unprepared for the industry when I graduated. So I went into a different career. Then, when I was pregnant and renovating my house in 2019, I discovered the podcast, which reignited my passion. I followed Sophie's lead and moved to the countryside, and I've been running my business for 3.5 years now. I love it. It's going really well, and I currently have a waiting list. So she says a big thank you from me. Oh,
that's
Minnie,
amazing.
That is amazing. I absolutely love that. And I think it's so true. I think we've got a lot of people who listen to the podcast who are renovating their own properties, but are also working in the interior design world. And I think it's created a really lovely space for people to share ideas, especially over on the Facebook group, share ideas and support one another. And I think the fact you've made a career out of it, Minnie, is just brilliant.
We also had a lovely comment from Fiona Wallace, who says, OMG, where to start? Podcasts come and go, but yours has been a constant for me since the very beginning. Love travelling to work on Thursdays when I know there is a new episode to listen to. I have learnt a lot, thought about my home differently, but probably the thing I have enjoyed the most is how accessible the podcast is. You talk about things which people can do for a whole range of budgets and property sizes. Something for everyone. I really hope this is a little lie down and you will be back soon.
Yeah, that's so gorgeous. And I think that's right. I think people have really enjoyed knowing that it's coming every Thursday. That kind of like consistency has been really, really lovely, isn't it? That we always check in. But that's probably
why we're a bit tired.
You and me off the most. We're going to be so honest with you, Fiona. We really love the podcast, but turning up every Thursday has been really, really tough. But I'm sure we will be back after our little break. So this is from Andrew McDaniels. She says, I'm walking into middle age and need this kind of joyful, unpretentious encouragement to take seriously the things that make me happy. There are few places in my life where women's creativity is taken seriously and isn't protected by fussy gatekeepers. This pod is that place. Genuinely thankful for that as much as all the decorating tips. Oh, Andrea, thank you. I think that's such a lovely, lovely message.
I'm starting to squirm now, even though it's lovely. So I'm going to read Sandy Forbes. You're my favourite podcast. I have listened to every episode and laughed along with you two so much through the years. I listen at work with headphones on and have a hard time suppressing my giggles. I talk about my design ladies from the UK. I'm an Anglophile from Oklahoma. And I love that you have differing style sensibilities but still support each other. I enjoy learning about design from you in general, and I have learned a lot. And consider it a bonus to hear about anything specifically British, such as, remember this, the washing up bowl, the Christmas crackers, radiators, etc. Not to mention listening to your British vernacular. I'm gutted that you'll be gone for a while, but I'm sure you both deserve a bit of a lie down after all this time. Thank you for all you've done. Just please promise that you'll be back.
I love that. Lots and lots of people have been enjoying the giggles, which is good to hear, because I think my laughter can be, what's the word, Marmite to some ears. But luckily we've got enough people who enjoy it. So that's all good. So Kate, there we are. We're at an end. 149 episodes.
That's quite an archive. That's quite a lot of hours for people to go back and listen to.
I tell you what, when I was reminiscing about what we'd done, it did make me think I'm going to go back and listen to some of those episodes. There's some absolute pearls in there. But I know everybody is going to want to keep in touch. So I'm going to say we're going to keep the Great Indoors Facebook group open, because it's a great place for you all to share your renovation stories over there, so you can still hang out there. And Kate, where can people keep in touch with you over this little break?
I have moved over to Substack now, so you will find me writing on Substack at katewatsonsmythe.substack.com. www.thebookshop.com.
And we can put links to that in the show notes, of course. And I'm going to be concentrating on my online interior design school this year. I'm going to be bringing you more webinars, getting some more in real life get-togethers and workshops together. I'm going to be producing new courses. I've even planning my own retreat at the end of the year in Marrakesh. So sign up to my email list on my website, sophierobinson.co.uk, to be the first to know about, you know, my continued journey to general world domination, Kate. I mean, this is where this is all heading.
I see. Before you go to Sophie's retreat in Marrakesh, you can, of course, come to mine in Italy. If we're going for world domination, I just thought I'd mention mine. All the details are on my Substack page.
Well, let's not forget, it was only a couple of episodes, Kate, that you were vision boarding for your year of calm,
sharing abundance.
Sharing abundance. And your retreats was a big part of that, wasn't it?
There we go. Yeah.
So, are you fully booked already?
Nearly fully booked. There's a couple of places left in September. And actually, the demand has been such that we're thinking of putting on one in October. Should be a slightly short one. That'll just be a long weekend, Friday to Monday morning.
I think that's so nice. So after doing so many podcasts remotely, we're sort of concentrating on a few in real life events this year. And we'd love, love, love to meet any of you wherever you are in the globe. If you can get to us, come and hang out with us. Oh, it's been a bit emotional, Kate. I feel like we can't end this episode without also giving a massive shout out to our amazing podcast team. The incredible Sarah Cudden, our producer from Feast Collective, who silently in the background untangles all our ramblings and makes it into some audible delight.
Edits out all your coughs and shrieks.
Exactly. Also Kate Taylor as well, our producer from Feast Collective, who kind of got us going originally. Big shout out to her. Obviously Natalie RPA, who books it, makes it all happen, and the amazing Hannah, who's looked after our insiders and the newsletter throughout this time. So it's not just you and me, we've got an amazing team of women behind us, and also of course our lovely insiders. You've been a huge support, and I'm going to be honest, we're going to miss you, and to you, our lovely listeners. So it's a goodbye from me, and well, some goodbye from Lucy the dog, isn't it, Luce? And go on, Kate, one last time.
We'll see you in the great indoors.